And stuff not here.
All right. I am calling the Champaign County Mental Health Board meeting study session to order. Can I get a roll call, please?
Lisa Liggins Chambers. Chris Minor.
Here.
Molly McClay.
Here.
Joe Omosagie.
Yep.
Elaine Palencia. Jen Straub.
Yes.
Jane Sprandel.
Here.
John Paul Joachim.
Here. All right. And with that, I will move. We'll go on to the approval of the agenda. I will move to approve the agenda. Is there a second?
Seconded.
All right. All those in favor, say aye. Aye. All those opposed, same sign. All right. Those in favor have it. Next, we'll move on to citizen input. We'll limit public participation to 5 minutes and a total of 20 minutes total. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to make a statement, now is the time. All right, seeing none, we'll move on to my comments. Obviously, we have a lot of applications on the agenda, so I won't make any comments. So we'll move on to Lynn. If you have any comments.
100% housekeeping comments. Please sign in on the paper sign-in sheet in the room if you're here in person. Indicate your agency affiliation, if any. And then folks on the Zoom, if you wouldn't mind also signing in the chat and indicating any agency affiliation, that really helps us get it right in the minutes for the meeting. Thank you everyone for being here. And that's all I got. Oh, there are snacks in the actual in-person room. There's snacks and water for anyone who's interested.
All right. With that, we'll move on to the study session, PY 2025 applications for funding. So the next application is the Cunningham Children's Home ECHO Housing and Employment Support on page 128. And I think Chris is the primary.
All right, everybody. We're looking at ECHO Housing and Employment Support through Cunningham Children's Home. They're looking at for roughly $204,000. Most of this is going to be to hire two full-time employees for the program. It looks to holistically combine services for employment and housing. Looking over this, I really don't have any questions except one. I'm seeing that we're providing 100% of the funding. I assume that's just this program through Cunningham. So they do have other, okay. It's really all I have to say in sake of time.
I'll just follow up and say that housing first approach was the first thing that I saw after the price tag. That is the gold standard right now for addressing homelessness. You can't really work on any of the rest of the hierarchy of needs without that first shelter and safety. I noticed that the full-time case manager is a big part of this budget. I did have a question about criteria for discharge that wasn't addressed, but maybe I should have read more. And like Chris, I did notice that we are 100% of the revenue. But it looks like a very solid program. That's what I got.
I did have one question. I apologize. I did not read this proposal because I trust my colleagues here. So they did ask for a 60% increase over last year. What was that for? I mean, I'm sure it's totally warranted, but just curious.
It's been a minute since I read this now because I read it in prep for last meeting. Does the person who is here from Cunningham want to speak to that?
Is there anyone here from Cunningham?
It looks like there are two.
Yes.
Thank you. Is this Angie?
Yeah, this is Angie. I didn't know if I was getting, you could hear me okay.
We're good.
There we go. Yes, our increase request is because we're increasing our numbers by three. So we're trying to go from a caseload of 15 to 18, as well as adding a half-time case aide position to support the extra numbers for the case manager.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I had a question also. So I am going to ask about the fact that the request from our board is for 100% of the total program revenue. Thinking about the fact that this program is expanding, what if any, are the plans for the future to diversify the funding to expand beyond our board?
Yes, we are very open to any of the grants. We actually expanded our ECHO program back in 2019 when we pulled, the first year we ran it from the Champaign County Mental Health Board, we realized it of individuals and families we served, like maybe like 34 that first year, that about 5-8 of them in between the transitioning ages of 8 to 24. So when we sought out other grants, we did find one from the state for DHS, and we obtained that one to serve just that transitioning youth age. So we will continue to explore grants that can help us fund, but it did help us specify services for the homeless just from that age group so that we could focus on ECHO outside, which have been 24 and above.
To follow up, is that grant from the state continue, like, are you continuing to use that?
Yes, we have yes, it's for 3 years. So, and we have reapplied, yes, every year for a continuing grant.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a few questions as well. This is
sure.
John. So, you know, the increase in the funding is for 60% more. But you said the caseload is going to increase from 15 to 18 at a time. So that's about a 20% increase. You know, what extra services or, you know, increase in, you know, your treatment plan clients are you going to have? Because you're already at 20. So I know your target was 15 last year, and that would be an increase of 30% or 33%. Like, I think the treatment plan client, if you're going to increase funding by 60%, should be closer to like 30 treatment plan clients a year instead of just 20, you know, just mm-hmm. basically accomplished in the last year. I don't know if you wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, we're open to re-looking at our numbers. We felt like a case manager sustains a caseload of 15 is pretty appropriate just for what they're juggling on a full-time basis. And that we felt like they could juggle 18 at a time. So we could serve that in a year as they discharge and they're also, you know, being serviced through the case management. But the case aid will assist with what we like to refer to as like our gopher work, where, you know, if the case manager is really working on assessments and life skills, then we're also having the case aid help them to maybe run to DHS and apply for benefits, go to the food banks, you know, go obtain legal documentation. So it's kind of the errands that are being run to help support some of the case manager work.
Thank you so much. That's very helpful.
Okay.
Any other questions? Comments. All right, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
With that, we'll go on to the Family Stronger Together, and we have Joan Lasagie and Dr. Lisa Liggins Chambers as the readers.
So, this Families Together, Trauma Informed, Culturally Responsive, and Therapeutic Preventative Services involved in for vulnerable youth. Involved in the juvenile justice system. This is something that I have discussed with several people outside of here. Pat Agee has been really involved in trying to get this in place. And I see that we're not, the total budget is 282, but the current funding year is 398. So we're looking at 84% of it for costs. I mean, Cunningham runs a little bit of a deficit, but I mean, I think it's one of those things that they're trying to provide more services than they actually can. I mean, over the years, that's an ongoing thing. I have no questions about what they're doing. I mean, I think the redeploy Illinois for redeploy for juveniles is really an important aspect of it, because I think if we can I don't want to use the word arrest it now. We don't have to deal with it. That's one of my friends used to say, pay me now, pay me later. And let's get it done now. But I don't have any questions about how they want to utilize the funds and what we're trying to do or what they're, I keep saying we, I've not worked at Cunningham for 27 years. So it's just about stabilizing families and youth. And I think it's a really good idea because it's, if we don't do it now, pay me now or you pay later. Lisa?
I don't have any questions. I thought it was thorough.
Good.
No, there's something I didn't quite understand why they're asking 30% less from us, or is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Or
correct.
Yeah.
So they've got other sources of funding.
Yeah, redeploy money.
And that's okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, over the years they've worked, I mean, Pat Agee has worked on that quite a bit too, for the redeploy body.
I know she has, and that was that whole program. The cost before they got hold of it was a big thing we were analyzing. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to make sure we seldom see that. So
hey,
you know,
when that happens, we're thankful.
Yeah.
We don't have any questions.
Any other questions, comments? With that, we'll go on to the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club, CU Change. And that's for $85,575. And then that's Dr. Lisa Liggins-Chambers and Joe Omosagie. That is on page 139.
I'm sorry.
Dr. Lisa, I apologize. We always have them. I really am sorry.
But you're good. Okay. You got it.
Are you going to sing the song too, huh? Okay. Is that your primary or my primary? Okay. it's for stabilization of family and to support the youth through not just, I mean, education is really what I'm hearing and seeing here. And I think I don't have any major questions. I mean, I like the fact that you say only 85% of the youth will remain engaged in school or take required steps towards engaging in school. Why 85%, not 100? I'm messing with you, really. If you want to, go ahead.
Use the mic, please. I'm Amy Brown. I'm the CEO of our Don Moyer. Monica is our chief operating officer, and she actually is intricate with the program on a daily basis. So she'll probably be answering most of our questions and would probably take an hour to answer that.
No. Okay. I want to go home tonight. Give me a concise version of why.
I think the realistic version is that what we have done when we were producing all of our metrics was to look at what our previous numbers have been. So we wanted to really produce a accurate picture of what have we seen in the past, considering the families and the youth that we're working for and the barriers that they're facing and that we're supporting them with facing. 85% is something that we felt we could promise on delivering and really reach within our families. 100% is always our goal. Of course, but realistically, 85% is where we've been landing consistently.
I appreciate that. Thanks. Do you have any? Go ahead.
Hi. I had my question was answered last night because I texted Lynn because I was actually concerned if you requested enough money. when I saw the type of testing and assessment that you all are moving to. You know, as a psychologist, I know how expensive those things are, and but I wasn't sure what kind of assessments you are doing, but I thought, you know, that's expensive. Do they actually have enough funding for this and all of the things that they're doing? Otherwise, I didn't really have any questions, but I did want to know if you could share your grassroots program just a little bit. Is it new? Is it a new program? Isn't there a program that you guys are starting? I thought it was on the last couple of pages. Or maybe I'm mixing it up with Rosecrans.
Is that the
Champagne? Is that Rosecrans?
The Coalition?
It might be the.
That's Rosecrans? Okay.
Are you looking at the Cultural and Linguistic Competence Plan or? I know it's a lot. I'm so sorry.
I'd encourage us all to use our mics so the people online can hear us, and also anybody who might be a local politics nerd and watch these kind of things.
Don't be talking about me on the mic. I will use the mic. Thank you, Jen.
Also, so you know, what's showing on the screen is not what's recording. The recorded view has two really lovely views of all of us. Finally, I'm sorry, you can't see it. It really looks good.
But you can't hear it unless you're using your mic.
All right. Any questions, any comments?
No, I thought the application was thorough. I enjoyed reading it. I was actually very excited about it. So it's definitely a program that I appreciate personally. But also, I just have one question. Do you all have Spanish speaking personnel that helps the Spanish speaking population?
There we go. Okay. So I can start. So we do not have a Spanish speaking case manager, but we do have resources and partnerships with folks if we do have a family that is in need of any translation services to receive our services across the organization. We have partnerships that we work with to make sure that happens.
Sorry, Jen, you have interpreters.
I do have a question. I'm going to go with the question I've been asking everyone, which is the request from our board is for 99% of total program revenue, if I'm looking at the right place. What efforts might be taken in the future to expand and diversify the funding that you get for this program?
Sure. That is something that is really at the front of our brains. We are constantly looking at grants.gov, trying to expand our funding for all of our programs, and especially this one. We see the value on a daily basis and how this changes our youth lives. We're also constantly trying to do new fundraisers. We just had one last week, and we'd love to be in that place. But right now, this service is so unique and so specific, very much tied to what we see the true needs are, and fills a gap. So we're very grateful for the Mental Health Board.
Thank you very much. And I think that illuminates just the continued issue of the federal and state level not rising up to meet the needs of the communities and supplying proper funding opportunities, especially for such unique programming. I think I I could say this about, you know, all of our requests. I would really like to see the University of Illinois step up and be a partner to organizations, since the university brings in lots and lots of funding. So,
You're kidding me.
If you want to go off on that joke, go for it.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? All right. With that, we'll move on to the Community Coalition Summer Initiatives. So Jane and Molly McClay.
All right. So again, a program that we are all pretty familiar with. It's been around for a while. They did ask for $107,000, which is a 16% increase from last year. But in previous years, they had requested $107,000. So it's really, you know, it's not that big of a thing. As we know, they really are working with youth 9 to 18 with emotional disturbances and trauma. I'm always a large supporter when we get outside of Champaign-Urbana, and I see that we're serving some folks in Rantoul. I think Muhammad was on here. I think that's important, too, that we're reaching those folks. Something that pleased me is, no offense, but there's no staff costs associated with this program. So to me, this is all going to the kids to make them have the ability to experience things and get the interactions and the mentoring that they need. And so that highly pleased me. Again, it's a great program. Not that I'm afraid of Tracy, but I don't have anything bad to say about it. I mean, I think it's something that is well respected. And so...
Yeah, I'll just add, you know, this is a program that I think focuses kind of on the heart of our work, which is how do we prevent individuals in our community from sort of coming at this from a preventative perspective? How do we prevent violence? How do we prevent the various different life events that might lead to mental health and substance abuse challenges over time? Enriching young people's lives is just a hugely important endeavor. I guess the one question I had, this is maybe more for the staff and if you need any clarification at this point, but I know there was a mention that providing information about the subcontracts for programs is something that was needed. Is that something that you all need clarification on right now or just wanted to mention?
That's, they've done that traditionally. It's important to us to have that information because wherever this money goes, the same rules follow. So there are staff costs, but they're through subcontracts. So these are not the typical providers. I mean, that's, they probably already have some folks in mind. So they usually share that with us once it's settled. Yeah.
Some more information to come.
I think the only thing I would add is in the notes, it says that, you know, this is a return to the $107,000 funding that had been done in previous years. Last year, we made a cut with many of our funding because of limited resources. So even though we say it's a 16% increase, it's really a return to the funding levels of what it had been in the past. So it's not really an increase from previous years.
And unfortunately, our funding is not any better, just to let you know. It's a little better, but okay, little. Okay. Just a heads up.
It's bad, but it's better than I thought it was last week. So it's not as bad as last year, but it's also not as bad as last week.
Any other questions, comments? All right. Thank you very much. Now we are going to skip to page 159 because we already did the first followers. So the next one is the advocacy. It's the GCAP, Advocacy Care and Educational Services. It's a new program that has applied for $65,000. And then we have Jane and Elaine Palencia presenting.
Hi,
All right. So this is a new program. So that is exciting. Like you said, it's the Greater Community AIDS Project of East Central Illinois asking for $65,000. Of course, they really want to focus on helping people with transitional housing, rehousing. You know, that's kind of the focus. And we've talked many times how housing is one of the keys to help people get to the next level. So this funding would go towards hiring a client service advocate to kind of help get through some of those hurdles these people are experiencing. Again, I felt like it was a great proposal. Really nothing major was concerning to me, but I did have a question. I don't know if we have anyone who could answer it. I guess out of curiosity, how many individuals estimate, I guess, how many individuals in, say, Champaign County do we have that are living with HIV or AIDS at this time?
Hi, I'm the executive director at GCAP. So that's hard to say. I actually used to work at the health department, and we, anytime anybody gets diagnosed with a communicable disease, the health department gets notified. And in Champaign County and in Region 6 is actually what we look at. There's about 500, I believe, folks living with HIV and AIDS. But that number is increasing, particularly among folks that are in the 20 to 35 years old range. So that number is hard to tell how many folks we're going to get new diagnoses for each year.
Okay. I appreciate that. It was just more out of, you know, curiosity. You know, I'm in my late 40s. So, you know, Ryan White was the first person that, you know, I really knew about HIV and how we need to love all those around us. So thank you for that statistic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just I'm glad that this program has come to us. The staff noticed there were a number of problems with the errors in figuring some numbers. So I think they might like to be part of our evaluation capacity building program. So that if we fund them, I think that could be suggested. I know they've been around a long time, but just that kind of thing might be a help. And I just want to say that they mentioned having an ADA accessible environment. And I don't think I had seen this on an application before. And it might be something we would want to look at, because I go around looking for that. And you would be, maybe you wouldn't be amazed. Post office in town here that a person in a wheelchair couldn't get through. I've been on a university campus where people with wheelchairs couldn't get through. You know, I was at a retreat center in Louisville where a person with a wheelchair wouldn't have been able to get in this huge building where all kinds of conferences happen. So I'm glad to see that. And I think it's something when organizations have their own facilities, and even if they don't and use somebody else, it might be something when we're looking at the CLC plan that we should see if it's the building's ADA compliant, we could ask. That's all I have.
Thank you for bringing that up. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
I'll just add, I know that there is still, after all these years, so much stigma around an HIV AIDS diagnosis, and having an organization that is really focused on meeting the needs of this population is really, really important. And I'm very glad to see a request coming to us from GCAP.
Me too. Because over the years, I've worked with GCAP, but this was more in the 90s, so it's been a while.
Yeah, glad to see you at the helm. Glad to see this programming. Really excited to see what you do with it.
I'm actually surprised you're just now incorporating, I guess is the right word, this type of program in the area. I mean, it's 2024. I wrote my master's thesis back in 1996. Yeah, I mean, it's a new program. That's surprising for me personally.
Not new to the community, but new to applying to us.
But her program has been here?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, new.
Yeah, GCAP has been around since, it's almost 40 years now. It'll be 40 years next year. This is just a new program that'll help our clients as they transition into permanent housing. Because we've seen a lot of clients who struggle to find social support that helps them make that step.
It's an old program. Okay.
Again, I agree wholeheartedly with the board. You know, I'm really glad this program is out there. And, you know, I really hope we can fund this year. Again, individuals with HIV tend to have more difficulty being, you know, not having as much social support or other difficulties, which like transportation and finding housing. You know, there is a good portion of the population with HIV that doesn't have that issue and they do fine, but really there is a big segment that, you know, needs assistance, and being able to provide that is, you know, a huge relief and can be life-saving for these individuals and their families. You know, a lot of these individuals do have children as well. And we see them in the office and, you know, it can be really hard for them to get to doctor's appointments. And, you know, if they're living far from places that don't have a bus stop and having to have a friend, you know, take them anywhere to like the grocery store or to appointments and being able to find housing that is, you know, easy for them to access all the things they need is really important. And so anything we can do to help them find stability and, you know, find some housing security is really important for the longevity of the health of the community. So I thank you very much for this application.
I'm the only one who hasn't spoken, so I want to get in and just say thank you for doing the good work.
All right. With that, we will move on to the next application, which is GROW, the peer support, with Elaine and Joe.
So the GROW program, Julian Rappaport, who used to be on this board, did some of his research was about this group. So we learned a lot about them as a not just an international group. And about the peer support was an early concept to us. You brought one of the early groups that insisted on the peer support model. And in their application, they call that services the professionals do not provide, that they provide through the, and we just got some nice cards that helps people, that we can pass out to help people find GROW. And they're asking, of course, they fit two of our priorities, really closing gaps in access and care, and also safety and crisis stabilization. They help people with mental health conditions who are seeking either prevention or personal growth. And this extends to people who are homeless and or have substance abuse issues. And they have they work through meetings, weekly group meetings and monthly socials and all kinds of different kinds of meetings as you go up the hierarchy as a peer of learning how to support each other and the group. And so therefore, these are all non-treatment plan clients because you're not working through treatment plans. And there are two of their groups are in the county jail, one for women and one for men. So a real effort to cover the population. We are funding 95% of this, and 81% of that is personnel, but other things like professional fees and transportation for people and so on. But we're basically funding the whole staff, the 3.15 FTEs, And the rural coverage is good. There are, I think, six different options of how you can connect, including Zoom and a place in Rantoul. They have good collaborative agreements with other groups. I would say, again, we've already talked about when we're funding most of what most of the group's costs, we hope they'll look further for other grants and other sources, because county money is always soft and we're never quite sure. So so just for, you know, stability, I would suggest that. I did have a question about where you showed the breakdown of the demographics and had children even from 0 to 6, 4 children, and 7 to 12, 2 children. And I just wondered, how is that the families? So you give services to children of families that are at risk in this way?
They come to our socials, and that's the one time that the whole family can come in and get to know each other and establish relationships and things like that. We don't have a lot of children, but we do at times, don't we, Lisa? So, yeah, and we'll play games or do crafts or whatever, you know, that day. It's like a family thing. Yeah,
that's so what you're that's going for.
What
right?
little bit we do with kids. Okay. Now, we have something in the works right now, so that might change, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I have.
That was my question. Something in the works for young folks, because we don't have Operation Snowball was around for quite a few years. And it almost went with a GROW idea of how to work with young people. And is that something that's eventually we would be funding?
I want to really bad. We piloted our youth program and had it done. We did it in Chicago and we did it in Southern Illinois. We have an entire 9-week curriculum that could be taught in a health class in a school, with the piece at the end, with the hope that the students who got something, that learned something, can come to a group after school program. It'd be an ordinary GROW group, but it's a little different with youth because they're attention spans. You know how they are. And the whole idea behind that was, not only when you work with youth, you want to make sure you're really open and honest with parents. So I actually just spoke with Angie last week. We're going to do something. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to do a group for youth, hopefully, and then a group for adult side by side with it. And I'm all for it. I pushed that youth program for years. I've been with GROW for years. I was so upset that we did not get to finish that. But we can do it. But you know, guys, what we faced in the last few years with COVID and the community and getting everything back in order and finances and audits. And so we're probably in the place where we're going to be able to get moving on some of those things. I don't want to make promises I can't keep, but we're going to have a meeting in May to find out if we can do so. Yeah.
I mean, thank you. I mean, that's something that's always still been that as a community such as this, that we don't have something dedicated for 12 to 19.
Yes. And that the one, yeah. And I think it's important. It needs to happen. And I'm hoping within this next year, you got to project out a year or two. When it comes to our leadership, GROW's leadership's different than anything, because it has to be a step by step and it's a progressive thing. People have to learn our program because our philosophy is so much different than the ordinary everyday people. When we lose everything like we did it in 2020, lost all of our people. We were down to poor Chris just being a volunteer trying to manage us because of COVID. And we got things up and running to where we weren't just community, because we've always only been community. Friendships are key. We that's what we do. So maneuvering through, I'm so excited about that little card. You guys have no idea those little progresses we make. I am excited about that. And we're really, I've made a lot of connections just this last week with people that have called me, come into my Welcome to Grow, ask right here in this community. So that's where we're at with it.
Thank you. Thank you.
I had a question, but with intense power reading, I found the answer. So it says here, being a peer program, your group organizers are seasoned leaders, often with lived experience. That's a big thing. A friend of mine, Glenn Martin, said that those closest to the solution are those close to the problem are closest to the solution, but generally furthest from the resources. So now you're here, and hopefully we can be a great resource for you. I would like to ask, what percentage of your leaders actually are lived experience? Is it a lot of them or just one or?
All except for the people I hire off the street. But
they have lived experience technically.
I expect those people to have lived experience. Now, sometimes that's hard to. The philosophy behind our program, because we have our whole program is its own program. And the educational part, I mean, we just got a surplus of mounds of educational material on why we do the things we do and the structure that we have. Yes.
I just wanted to commend you for that. Make sure to keep doing that because I messed up a little saying, but those closer to the problem are close solution. It's easier to communicate with people if you've been there and lived that as well. So I just love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Don't have any questions. Mm-hmm. Anything. Just give us the money. Guys, we have an umbrella company called Growing America, just real quick. And I know you guys are real big on making sure we're getting money from other sources. I have started engaging with the state of Illinois again, and they're being friendly to me since they cut us. And I've also, because we have in our umbrella company a little bit of extra money, not a whole bunch, we are going to work with some grant writers and see if we can't get some more financial support in here, because having those financial restraints puts restraints on what we can do to grow too. You guys know that. We don't pay a lot. And I just want to let you know that we're working on
it. Well, since you didn't get a question, you wanted one, I came up with one. What are generally the size of the groups inside the county jail? If someone has been incarcerated, that's very special to me. About how many people are attending these?
Well, the women's group, about 6 or 7. Men's group has a waiting list, and we are going, actually, I think Kisa talked to Celeste. I think we're going to start too. They love Grow.
Yeah. We can only have up to 12 people in the group. So for the men's, we actually have 12 every week, and then we have 12 on the wait list. So that's why we're trying to start another group.
And when they can't come, they are not happy.
Yeah.
So, and also what's going on in the jail, which is really cool, which put a big strain on us, we have to have 2 people in there. So I pay 2 people to go in those groups. So now we're partnering with the other groups that are in there. And I got Teddy down at Free Christian Service on State Street. You guys know about that, Free Christian Services. And she's been fingerprinted, and she's volunteering for us. So things are finally coming up. We're getting some people that are willing to work with us because, yeah, go ahead.
Are you talking about Christian Health Center?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about. Yeah, and we actually are floundering through trying to start a group there at 10:30 on Friday. Hopefully we'll get some people from Strides and, you know, different places close. So we'll see how it goes. It's not working very well yet. We went last week and we didn't have anybody but just me and Teddy and a few of us. But I'm hoping we're going to stay consistent and hope we'll get people in. So.
And that's pretty much what you've got to do is have a space and just keep being consistent.
Be consistent.
And also, I mean, collaborating with other organizations is essential to also use your resources effectively.
You guys have a lot of services here. It takes a while to even get your mind wrapped around how many now. So, but I appreciate you guys. I'm glad that you see us as important. I really do, and valued. And I'm hoping that that happens. I want Grow to be what it was when we got cut to the quick in 2015. I don't want Champaign County to have to fund us forever. the state should fund GROW, and I believe that. So hopefully we'll see what happens.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, so we'll move on to Rosecrans. The first one is the benefits case management on page 169. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have... Oh, perfect. Good.
Rosecrans.
Yeah, we've got six applications from Rosecrans, so yeah.
Yeah, they've got a lot. But since with Rosecrans, I mean, one of the main things, I mean, this benefits case management, I don't know why we have to make it so complicated. And yes, it creates jobs, but why do we have to make it so complicated? It should be easier. But I see, I mean, I understand and see what the benefits of it is because we don't have to make it this complicated. That's just, I'm hung up on that. However, I think from my reading, I do not have any questions about what is being done and how it's being done. I just really would hope that we don't make things so complicated.
Well, I mean, right, like people without resources have to have resources to be able to apply for resources. It makes no sense. It's circular. If they had the resources to apply for resources, they wouldn't need resources. So, yeah, again, this, for people who, weren't the readers on this, basically, you know, you have a case management that helps them get Medicaid, Medicare, SSDI, SNAP, pharmacy assistance, other public programs. I think we do fund several programs right now that are doing a lot of case management. I feel like that's kind of the crux of all these applications is the government having this big gap of having the resources and not being able to get it to the people who need them. And so then we need agencies that are playing the middlemen to help get those resources. And it seems like it's such a waste of funds. I'm sure these agencies would love to be doing other programs and doing other things and, yeah, providing other resources other than case management. But this is what we need, and this is where we are, and this is the world we live in, and I'm glad that there are people stepping up to do this. I think, like Molly McClay would ask of other agencies, basically what is Rosecrans doing to increase other sources of funding to diversify their funding for this program, because we are funding about 99% of this. And then the other thing is obviously, they'll have to talk with staff about going over some of the contract considerations, like providing the negotiated federal indirect and cost agreement and clarifying expenses specific to the program. Unless Lynn had some comments on that.
Well, I want to apologize to the board and to folks from Rosecrans who are here because we haven't asked for that yet. I'm sure if we had asked, they would have sent it. I forgot, but we'll get it.
And nothing that's a big deal. So obviously it's a great program. I think we should fund it, but yeah. I don't know if there's someone from Rosecrans that can answer about just funding diversification, trying to seek other sources of funding.
Yes. Hi, my name's Melissa Pappas. I'm the executive director for Rosecrans, and we diligently look for other ways to fund the programs that we are requesting funding for this fiscal year. We have a grant team that is comprised of two individuals that are constantly reviewing applications for us to increase our funding. Right now, it's very difficult to get funding for a program, specifically the Benefits Case Manager program. And like you guys said, it is incredibly essential as these individuals getting benefits both help them and the community that they're living in.
And I know you've said this before and being on this board for several years, but I do like hearing it, just making sure that everyone understands that you guys do have all that. But I appreciate you explaining.
I do have a question. I was looking at the demographics of the people served, and I noticed there's some huge disparities here. And I wanted to just have you discuss it a bit, please. For example, you have served 87 Caucasian Americans versus, Black, one Asian, 80 men, 53 females, one Hispanic Latino, and then 132 not of Hispanic. And I know Champaign County, we have a huge population of, you know, Hispanic Americans or Latino Americans. So I wonder why there's a gap in service in certain communities. Please.
So I can speak in the sense of kind of where certain cultures and ethnicities view substance use and mental health treatment. Oftentimes, we see more stigma within the Hispanic and African American races when it comes to receiving substance use and mental health treatment. So we have programs that go out into the community that really try to drive those individuals to come and receive services from us, or so that we can provide them services within their own community. However, there is still, I believe, a lot of distrust within the system that Rosecrans is actively trying to prove that we are here to benefit individuals of all genders, races, and ages that experience mental health and substance use, but it is still something that we are kind of having to battle against, kind of earn that trust within the community as a behavioral health organization, and kind of changing some years of probably poor treatment and to these different types of communities. And so that's something that Rosecrans is actively working on changing the narrative and kind of changing the stigma surrounding receiving mental health and substance use treatment. But as you can see, it's still ongoing work.
So how are you all changing the stigma since you brought it up? Because, you know, there's also a huge African-American population in town. And I'm curious about that because I know there is a need. I do understand stigma, and I do know that we also have lots of schools. Are you, I didn't see it in the application, so I might be missing it, but are you in the schools? How are you advertising? And I'm sure that's part of the budget too. So, I mean, we can get the word out, and I think we are doing so. And I know you have a great organization. So I think that, you know, we are underserving, you know, a part of this, our community here. And I say our, meaning all of us, you know, by looking at these numbers.
So I think that it's twofold. So what are we doing internally to address that? We have a DEIB committee that we invest in bringing awareness to various cultural competencies and trainings for our staff, that when we are serving those populations, we are making sure that we are providing the most adequate care to them. But also externally, we are in the school systems. We are engaging in more community events. Our prevention program that we do not seek mental health board funding for is in Champaign, Vermilion, and Ford school systems, all the way from elementary school to high school, where we are providing preventative services for substance use to those students. So that is an incredible program that we are invested within the school systems for. So those are kind of things that we are doing to make sure that we are addressing kind of those barriers to coming into treatment for.
Gotcha. And another barrier is also, you know, the actual race and gender of your therapist, which of course I don't think is a part of the application process, but, you know, we know through research that children typically will perform better in school, come to therapy, you know, when they see individuals that look like them. And so do you also have therapists that match some of the populations that you serve? Because diversity and equity and inclusion is important, despite some politicians who want to wipe it out. And so I would like to see that happen, and maybe that can actually increase the numbers. So what's your take on that?
We do. We do have a variety within both our clinical staff, but also within our HR staff, within our office support staff, because it's not just the clinicians that we have found that we need to have diversity in. We have to have diversity in from the people that greet you at the front door to the individuals that are taking care of our facilities, to the people that are unit clerks that are checking charts. So we do take that as a priority for our facilities.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any other questions or comments?
Just say that I've used this service with some of my participants, and it, you know, as John indicated, you know, you have to be doctored in order to apply for disability. You have to have insurance in order to be doctored, and all of this handholding is insurmountable sometimes for our folks. And so I really appreciate this service, and I'm very glad that it exists. And if we could quadruple the amount of folks who are doing this service, that would be great. But right now I'm really happy that you're offering it.
Yeah, I think just like the term used in the Why It Matters addresses the labyrinth of that. I don't think there's a better word to describe it.
Deal with Social Security.
All right. With that, we'll move on to the next program, which is the Child and Family Services with Dr. Lisa Liggins-Chambers and Molly McClay.
Children and Family Services, one of my favorite areas dealing with children and youth. Rosecrans wants to improve mental health and well-being of our children, families, and youth here in Champaign County. They offer counseling. You guys know this. They're a big entity here. Transportation, case management, wellness, psych services for kids, which we need more of that, trauma, mental health, behavior, emotional, and they're expanding, actually, their trauma-informed system capacity. So I thought that's great, because that is definitely something that we need more of, trauma-enforced or trauma-informed therapy or trauma-focused therapy. They are culturally responsive and supportive in the area to children and their families to see them thrive. You know, I have some of the same questions that I had before about their demographics, but I'll defer to Molly on that one. Maybe, you know, she has questions about that part. As far as most of my questions came from the assessment piece, the IMCANS, I'm very familiar with that. Had to take it a couple of times and have some concerns with that. However, they have to use that because it's required by the state. For assessments, they're also using, I think, the Ohio scale, problem, symptom, and functioning scale. They, guys, correct me if I'm wrong on the funding, only because I'm new at this and I want to make sure I get it right. From the financial analysis, they are requesting is that for 2025-77, 175? Okay, I got that right. Okay. And so at the end of their application, they talk about a cultural and linguistic competence plan. And so I have to say their application is so thorough. You know, I mean, I probably didn't have to, but that's the one that was like 118 pages. So, and I actually have it here, Rosecrans. So I read all of it page by page. And so I thought it was very thorough, and I really appreciate the work that you do with the children and youth in the area.
I can just add on. So one thing that stood out to me about this application that I think is something that I haven't seen it as much of in our community is the connectedness to the school system. Need to find where my specific note were about it. I guess I wanted to understand a little bit more about the mechanism, like potentially how this is connected to the prevention program in terms of helping students who may need services kind of link from the prevention programming into child and family services, and what the kind of outreach in the schools is like from this particular program.
Absolutely. So our prevention program really, because it's embedded in our school systems, they really act like almost a feed into our other programming. They're able to be with the students in their natural schooling environment and really being able to connect with the teachers and the faculty that know the students well to understand their needs while collaborating on the Rosecrans end to set up those assessments that are needed to get them into Rosecrans like clinical treatment. Because prevention is more of like an education, but they're able to make those direct referrals. Also, if a student is getting directly referred from a prevention staff, they're really made a priority population. Youth in general are made a priority population for Rosecrans. And so the more collaborative information we have on the students, the quicker we'll be able to assess them and get them into the appropriate program for them. So the prevention team is really kind of like tentacles out in the school systems to be able to bring those youth into our services or align them even with services maybe outside of Rosecrans if appropriate. And so that's kind of how the two work together. We are also currently building up our youth CST program for here in Central Illinois. And so that program will really provide a lot of case management services in the community, also includes. So being able to kind of be that support system for the schools and the families in their current environment that the student is in. So whether it be the school or their personal home, and so really being able to meet the client where they're at. And so that program will also help support providing these services to the youth and then also getting them directly into contact with a youth psychiatrist. We all know the wait lists that psychiatry in general has, and then you triple or quadruple that for a youth psychiatrist. And so really these are kind of direct lifelines to our youth psychiatrists that we have on staff.
I guess to add on to that, what is the typical wait time for youth to get into the psychiatrist? And are there any efforts to recruit more psychiatrists for youth in this area?
So you're going to be shocked when I tell you this. We have no wait.
That is a shock, and that's great.
we do not have a wait, which is shocking. So I think right now what Rosecrans is doing is we're trying to figure out how we can make sure that the community knows about our psychiatry. Our psychiatrist is Phil or is seeing patients, but she has room to see more. And so I think I spoke to a committee not too long ago, letting them know, hey, we have availability to utilize it, because our goal is to be able to add on hours. We just want to make sure that our psychiatrist is filled. And so we do have availability. And so we're navigating that incredibly well with how we are admitting youth to see the psychiatrist and to see the mental health clinician that we have on staff. So we do have availability, and we want the community to know that.
Sorry, what's the range that the psychiatrist sees?
I'm sorry, you broke out.
What's the age range for which the psychiatrist sees patients?
The psychiatrist sees 5 to 17.
17. And what mm-hmm. Do they have to have to see the psychiatrist?
What insurance?
Like if they have no insurance, if Medicaid.
They do not have to have a payer source.
Yeah, I'm a pediatrician, so I'll just let all our pediatricians know that. And we
okay.
Quickly. Yeah, because we had a new person in that was doing visits in Bloomington, Dr. Burgundy, and she filled up really quickly. And, our psychiatrists at Carl are pretty full too. So we didn't know about that resource. And so I'll send out an email and let them know. I mean, you can always reach out to Christie Clinic Pediatricians. Mm-hmm. Those are the two big groups in town. And there's some at OSF now. So if you just email the pediatric medical directors at each of those places, they'll let them know. And
oh, that's great. Thank you.
Because those are the people who send the referrals out, and they just need to know what insurances, you know, what age ranges, what does your psychiatrist feel comfortable treating, and they will send them there your way.
And the goal is to keep that psychiatrist in town because they leave quite often. So,
yeah. I do want to provide information. It's a telepsychiatrist, so it's not a psychiatrist that is in person because we were not able to obtain one. But we were able to obtain a dedicated youth psychiatrist that sees the patients via telehealth.
And my goodness. Where, what location does the patient have to be in? Do they have to be in the Rosecrans office, or are they doing it? Can they do it from home? Or if they can't do it at home, do you have availability in the office to do the video visit for the family?
So right now it's primarily in the office, so they can get roomed by a nurse, get vitals. What we are hoping for, though, once we get our youth CST team up and running, is that if an office visit absolutely cannot be done at that time, to be able to manage that appointment with the youth case manager, with the youth and the family member in the youth's home, if that is what would benefit the youth. So instead of missing the appointment, how can we bring the appointment to them to really break down those barriers?
And then can you just send in an email with like the doctor's name and then all the contact information for families? So, and then do you guys need a referral then from us if they do have insurance? Or do you guys just have them call and you'll make an appointment?
They call and make an appointment. So, but you could also send a referral. It's not required, though. But the referral does help us get that collaborative information about the youth before we see them.
Perfect. So, yeah, just send Lynn that email with all the information.
Absolutely. Yes.
I have a question about the schools. When I was in schools, I remember that Rosecrans was there as a crisis team, but I didn't really see the therapist in the schools like I did another mental health agency. Do you actually have therapists in the schools? And if so, you know, is that specific to just a few schools or is it many schools in Champaign County? Because that would also increase the number of children that are being seen within the area as well. Just you mentioned going to them or to, you know, where they are. So Child Find comes to mind. So I was just curious about that, please.
No, we currently do not have any therapists within the school systems. We still have our crisis teams that go out into all of the school systems whenever there is a crisis situation that occurs, because we are the crisis care providers for Champaign and Vermilion County. And so we are not embedded, but we go to those school systems. Prevention is the only program that is actually embedded into the school systems at this time.
Can that change?
It would be something that we would like to do in the future. That is how I'll keep that.
All right. Thank you very much. So the next one is the Criminal Justice PSC with Molly McClay and Dr. Lisa Liggins Chambers on page 179.
All right. So this is an important program for our community to do assessments for individuals who are within the criminal justice system, as well as providing case management, strengths-based case management. And I think, you know, this program is really important in terms of addressing needs that someone might have like immediately upon entry into the criminal justice system and helping to promote recovery and reentry and identify who might need supports around mental health and substance use needs. I appreciated the various evidence-based approaches that are being used, motivational interviewing, as well as strengths-based case management. I wanted to learn a little bit more about the moral recognition therapy because it's not something I'm as familiar with. And I was wondering if maybe that was something that you could speak to.
Yeah, I can speak to that. This is Dave Keller-Halls, the Clinical Services Director for Central Illinois Region. And I oversee the criminal justice program. And so it's a CBT-based model that is strictly geared towards criminal justice. And so that is specifically a group-oriented therapy. There's a training that we send everyone, all of the staff to, you know, go to it. It's virtual. But it is, again, based in CBT, but focused on the aspects of being involved with the legal system and the things that go along with that. So it is evidence-based specifically for individuals within the criminal justice system.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I also appreciated, you know, the virtual options that are available, recognizing that sometimes, sort of as the staff noted, that COVID mitigation in the jail can reduce participation. I think there's sort of the larger issue that has been mentioned about providing the negotiated federal indirect cost agreement. So I guess this is something that's across Rosecrans programs that is needed. That's okay. So that's something you're going to request from Rosecrans.
And maybe they can just send it right now because I just forgot to ask. But typically it's quite easy for them to share that. So thank you. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. So I guess I'll ask a question I've asked to most programs that I've asked questions to, which is with this request being for 73% of the request to this board is for 73% of the total program revenue. I noticed that the other program revenue is coming in part from Medicaid, interest income, miscellaneous, and then the biggest other source is Champaign County reentry. I wanted to know, first of all, how long is the Champaign County reentry funding for, and what efforts are being made to diversify the funding sources?
So I can speak to diversifying the funding sources. And that is, once again, we have our grant management team that attempts to review as many funding sources as possible that we could diversify for you. However, what we have found is that there is a decrease in trends when it comes to getting funds for individuals that are within the correction system or the jail system. And so that has increased difficulty in trying to figure out how we can support programs like the criminal justice program and the specialty courts program when the funding availability is decreasing. And so really trying to continue to look diligently for those funding sources. It's something that we are going to continue to do, but we have found that it is becoming more and more difficult to find availability to treat these types of populations.
That is very unfortunate. With the as it has been with kind of everybody that's mentioned the decreases in funding and just kind of seeing that deprioritization is a problem for sure. With the Champaign County reentry funding, is that something that is a longer term funding, or I don't know as much about that one. So I was wondering how long that is for.
Yeah, that contract actually will end at the end of the calendar year. So we just renewed for this year. It'll end December 31st of 24. We hope that they continue to fund us each year, but it's not always a guarantee, as you guys know.
Thank you very much. No further questions.
Any other questions, comments? All right. Well, thank you very much. The next program is the Rosecrans Crisis Co-Response Team. So this is a program that has a requested $410,000, which is an increase of 97%. You know, the funding goes to fund mainly mental health clinicians, a team leader, peer support specialists. So it goes to staff salaries. It's to provide you know, services. It's a behavioral health program to reduce encounters with law enforcement. Case managers engage with people and contact them to prevent criminalization and incarceration. They aim to reduce contact with law enforcement, hospitalizations, ER visits, increase access to treatments and resources, including crisis stabilization, peer support, and case management. And the nice thing about it is it does, you know, target services in Rantoul, not just Champaign-Urbana, but the Rantoul Police Department, Urbana Police Department, and then the Champaign County Sheriff's Offices. And then, you know, the majority are the hard-to-reach individuals from underserved populations, including lower-income, ethnic minority households. There's no parameters placed on the target population regarding gender, age, income, race, or ethnicity. And then, you know, it's to provide behavioral health support beyond the scope and expertise of patrol officers. And then, you know, the staff can be available for immediate response on location, which is nice. They, after they contact the individual, they complete a self-sufficiency matrix with the CCRT staff to see if crisis can be resolved without further action, or if resolution requires a treatment plan. And they'll provide care planning, coordination, monitoring, including linkages with housing, food, clothing, mental health services, substance abuse services, counseling, education, vocational training, financial education, employment, peer support. You know, so I mean, it seems like an excellent program. Obviously, it is a large increase in the request of funding. We are 75% of the total program revenue. Looking at the staff comments, you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask is if there's an update on the employment of some of the vacant positions. There is one vacant mental health clinician position, and then there was the vacant full-time support peer specialist. And so I was wondering if those were filled already or if they're waiting for funding, because if we're going to fund this, we want to know that that is going to be something that's going to happen. And then there was $127,000-ish that was unclear of how much of the money is allocated to indirect costs agreement or how that calculation was made. So there's some clarification that was needed to staff on page 186.
I can speak to the positions. We are waiting for funding in order to fill those positions. If we do not obtain funding, then we would have difficulty in maintaining those positions, especially the peer support position for the crisis diversion program. It is a completely non-billable program. And so it's a place for the community to come in regardless of if they are a Rosecrans client or not, if they are experiencing any crisis-like situations or just any emotional dysregulation, they are able to come in. They do not have to be a client with us. And the program is run by peer support staff. And so, but we would have to confirm funding before we would be able to fill a position like that. Same with the mental health one, clinician.
And then I had was, are any of the clinicians Spanish-speaking currently?
One of them is, yes.
Thank you.
So I also had questions about the vacancies, and I totally get the response of you don't want to hire people if you're not going to have the funding. Do you suspect it'll be relatively easy to fill these positions if you got the funding? Or we know a lot of social services, it's hard to find great candidates.
Yes, it is difficult and challenging to fill and sustain peer support positions. Oftentimes we get the candidate in, but due to some of their life experiences that make them such a valuable candidate for the role. Working within that population can cause a lot of triggers or stressors. And so we have really remapped how we support and supervise peer support specialists within Rosecrans, so that we can make sure when we are onboarding and bringing those individuals on, we are providing them with all of the tools that they need to be successful and to take care of themselves while they're in that role. I do not feel that it would be an issue filling it. We did not have an issue filling it, a role, a peer support role, like we have had like this in the past. But when we did not, when we lost funding for that role and we put it on pause, then, but I don't think that we would have an issue with filling a peer support role. For the mental health clinician role, I think that this program is exciting for a lot of individuals that are in the behavioral health field, working alongside law enforcement and being out in the community so much. We have not had some issues with filling these positions as we have with our other more stationary positions. So no, I don't believe that that would be an issue.
All right. Thank you for that. One more question. So I know that Urbana Police Department, Rantoul Police Department, and the Champaign County Sheriff's Office is who you guys work with. Does Rantoul or Urbana, do they fund you in any way?
So Rantoul and the Champaign County Sheriff's Department is funded through the Champaign County Mental Health Board, through you guys. And Urbana was funded through another grant that ends June 30th, 2024. So the Rantoul and the Champaign Sheriff's positions are a continuation of funding from this past fiscal year. And the Urbana one is the new one that we are requesting for so that we continue to keep the program running.
Okay, thank you.
You can ask Lynn.
Hey, I have a question. Was that state funding?
No.
Oh, okay. That was the federal. Okay.
All right. Any other questions, comments? All right. Thank you very much. All right. The next application is the recovery home with Joe and Elaine.
I read the other recovery home first, and I said, oh, that's not Rosecrans. So I read Terrapin. But, I mean, they have a lot of the same, I mean, trying to do a lot of the same things. Rosecrans is a little bit larger. They requested $100,000, and I'm trying to link the clientele with the different services that are in the community. I think, I mean, the difficulty would be with most SUD programs is how do you keep people from being cycled back in the system? So I don't have any questions about the grant. I guess I have say, how do you keep it from happening? I mean,
yeah, I don't have any. A lot of questions have been answered about how Rosecrans does things, so I'm not going to go back over that. But this is, yes, this continuing focus that we have, that has arrived to us about housing first, is part of all this. It would be part of the same thing, though this wouldn't come first. But it's a step down from inpatient treatment services. And then there are like seven or eight different things listed here. It's holistic in its approach of kind of surrounding the person with help. And they do have someone with lived experience on the governing body. They have transportation support for rural areas, and this is looking at, as Joe is pointing out, these are people with relapse potential. So very important, and there's no increase in the target numbers. So this is, I think it's at 22 TPCs, and we're doing 19% of the total program revenue. So it looks good to me. I mean, there's plenty of collaboration and attention to the things that we look at. So it's a lot of collaborative agreements with other groups that we fund or that have, you know, similar goals for the community. So I'm just glad these things have arisen in our community, the attention to home. So I don't have any questions.
Any other questions, comments? I mean, I agree with everything Joe and Elaine have said. So yeah, I do like that the program has stability in funding. It seems like there isn't an increase in requests for funding, which is what we want to see with our agencies and our programs, trying to make sure that there is a longevity and stability. Obviously, you know, over the last, you know, 10 years, there's been a lot of variability in funding. I think agencies that have been here and gotten through all that kind of understand how to survive the highs and lows of, financial hardships that they go through. So thank you. The next application is the specialty courts with Chris and Jen.
All right, I've been quiet. I got a lot to say on this one, so I'll go ahead and start. They're looking at requesting for $187,000, which is a 5% increase over last year. I'm going to do something I never do. I'm actually going to read off this. So the services are trying to provide work with drug court, transportation to and from appointments, court sessions, intensive case management, food, clothing, housing, medical, dental, vocational, educational, alcohol, and drug tests, drafting of court reports, weekly staffing with the court, planning and participation in specialty court graduations, and other special events. Most of this funding is going to two full-time employees. Let me make sure that I actually got that right. And we're supplying 99% of the total program revenue. With this, I will say this. At $186,000, I'm a PhD student finishing up in criminology, so I know a lot about drug courts. Generally, they save communities. This is research coming out of Stanford. Save about $2,500 to $4,000 in a community. And you said you have 15 graduates? Yeah, so that's $60,000, so we're paying out triple. And I understand there's a lot of little things that come into play. It's not that cut and dry. But I am kind of curious on that. Recidivism rate is good. Other organizations have a little bit better with less funding, and that is also a concern I have. But I guess one question that I actually will pose, is this just for drug court? I see you're working on a mental health court. Is this funding both those programs? Sorry, I spit a lot out there.
It's okay. So our staff that are in this program are prepared and ready to serve both substance use and mental health individuals. So when the mental health court does get up and running, we will be able to serve them as well whenever that does happen.
Okay, and you won't need more. That will cover both of them. Okay, and do you have a date on the mental health court? I haven't heard much about that.
No, we know about just as much as you do on it.
No, nothing about it. All good. Also, there was a note I saw, a successful specialty court system that relies heavily on Rosecrans staff time spent outside of billable hours. Can you break that down for me? I don't want anybody working for free. I'm not sure if I'm understanding that correctly. Oh, you don't know what I'm talking about? Can you?
No. So I think what that is referring to is that our specialty court team does a lot of things that are not that we're not able to bill for that program. So working within the court systems, being on staffings, writing court reports, things like that. So all of those things that make a specialty court run are some things that we're not able to bill for.
Understood. That's what I'll cover that. So they are going to get paid. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yes. They ain't going to work for free.
I think I might have had one more question, but we'll let it ride. We'll pass it over to, was it Jen?
Okay. Just to clarify the question that Chris asked. Sorry, I have to clarify it in my head first. It looks like Medicaid can be billed for a lot of these services, but we are covering the services that Medicaid doesn't cover, or is that incorrect? Am I misunderstanding the notes here?
So a lot of the like things that our outreach staff are handling, like Alyssa said, assisting with court reports, transportation, those things are not billable, whereas like the therapist providing clinical substance use services would be.
Okay, thank you. I had also highlighted the recidivism rate, Chris, but one thing that Judge Dyer said when he came to talk to the opioid settlement task force, which I also serve on, was, it's not a good bet necessarily, but the folks that they deal with, they are in the midst of substance use disorders, right? And those ones are tough. I would say that 65% of graduates not experiencing recidivism is probably a really great outcome, really. I know folks who've gone through the program, some successful, some not. All of them are very proud to have the opportunity. I did note that partners have expressed concern with the impact of staff vacancies and turnover at the courthouse. Hopefully some of the new staffing up there will make that a little bit better. Then I just noted that it's 99% of total program revenue. Lynn, at some point I thought that there were other funds for specialty courts.
I don't want to talk a lot about that. There were a couple of opportunities that might have been really helpful that came and went, and they were outside of our control. The first one was really outside of our control. Like it was probably could not be used to fund the kind of services that Rosecrans is doing for drug court. So what Rosecrans is doing for drug court is central to drug court. Like it's in the rules for drug court. So without it, they can't have a drug court. But there was an opportunity for some funding that I think would have actually paid for this, but I learned about it less than 1 week before the application was due. I was not an eligible applicant. I don't know if Rosecrans even knew about it. Some of our partners knew about it, but had very serious concerns which relate to the county hygiene and not drug court. So those barriers, I think, are being worked on right now. I don't think the situation is better, but my goodness, if I see an opportunity like that again, I will be telling everybody. It really made me sad because the Mental Health Board has funded this for over 20 years, and it's a successful drug court by all accounts. And, Illinois is on the map nationally for this, but we can't get a dime from the state. What? So anyway, I'll continue work on that. And I just want to say, like, while I'm rambling, that I did include in a lot of these, the staff notes at the bottom of these reviews for larger organizations like Rosecrans, maybe a couple of others, that they are in a position often to notice not just grant opportunities, but legislative advocacy opportunities before I do. So if they can maybe tip me off when their state association is working towards something that would be of mutual benefit to the mental health board and the community and the agencies, I would be really very happy to, you know, put our legislative advocacy efforts together, because I think Champaign County does kind of get the short end of things because we do so much for ourselves that maybe the state, you know, doesn't think of us first when they should.
And we have a grant writer now at the county. So, okay, sorry, I digress. I love specialty courts. We should have more specialty courts. Yes, specialty court.
Okay, one more question. You do a lot of work in courts and with the jails. How many formerly incarcerated people do you employ? Those closest to the problem are closest to the solution, but furthest from the resources.
So when we hire individuals that have lived experience, unless they are open to letting us know that they were formerly incarcerated, then, you know, that would be information that's privy to us, but that is not something that...
Oh, no background check required.
I mean, we do background checks, but on our level, that is our HR department that is handling that.
Okay. I just want to point out, it might sound like I'm being negative. I'm not. I flunked out of drug court and I went to prison. But if we had a service like yours at that time, 20 years ago, it could have been a different situation. So please know I'm not. That's why I'm being critical, because we do need this service. I'm just concerned about expanding it. Thank you.
Yep.
And with drug court, I mean, many people are dual diagnosed. And so I think a lot of times we're not looking at the other aspects of a dual diagnosis. And we're just looking at just the drug usage, I suppose. And the drug usage is probably trying to medicate the MI issues. So specialty courts. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to the recovery home, the Terrapin Station Sober Living application. I think it's Dr. Lisa Liggins-Chambers and Chris.
Yeah, okay, so we're looking at recovery home. They're requesting $91,000, basically, which is... I can't find it fast enough. I do apologize. I thought it was secondary, so I don't have a lot. But this money's going to go to service fees, sales of goods and services. Oh, this is the ultimate funding. Sorry, completely unprepared. But this is why I came to this, because this is highlighted because it's a question I have. Now, as far as summary, you can see what they do. We're kind of pinched for time to get out of here at 7:30. It sounds like a great program. But one of the things I see with alternate funding that really stuck out to me is rental income at $10,600. Do we have anybody from Terrapin online? Okay. Is that... I'm going to assume, or you can answer, is that people actually paying partial rent or something along those lines? Oh.
So I see that Nelson Novak is on the Zoom. If I don't know if he's close to the computer, but this would... I think you should answer instead of me answering for you. Because I might know the answer, but...
And I guess I could talk a little more. So we're going to be funding 87% of the total program revenue, and about half of that is personnel cost. Okay.
So the speaker's not working. Sorry.
Nelson, you could type the answer in the chat and
type.
Jane's seeing it and I can see it. Yeah.
And please know I'm not asking this in a negative fashion, because I'm thinking maybe you could, if that is what's going on, possibly request funding to cover that so they could have savings accounts when they leave. I'm just recommending this because I've been on many programs that do that. And again, I'm not telling you how to manage your program in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying that we could probably, well, I shouldn't say probably, perhaps there is a chance that we could fund that as well.
And if we can't get the answer today, you know, he can always email us, and then you can, Lynn can send it to the board. Yeah. So I think that's okay. Yeah. Were there any other questions, comments, or any other
things? He does answer.
Oh, perfect.
He says, of course, $100 a week, $400 a month. That is certainly something we would be interested in.
Okay, I don't think I have the power to prove anything like that, but just something to think about. $100 a week, that's completely fair, but it'd be really nice if we could fund that, and that could go into a savings account for them so they have a lot of money upon the release or upon the completion of the program.
I just want to say about this program is my understanding that it has been very responsive to the suggestions our board has made to it. So it has changed and come up to, you know, a level that through receiving suggestions and help from our board. And that's a good thing. Not everybody does that.
Nelson Novak says, thank you.
I have no questions. Is there any other questions, comments?
Nelson, do you take time off now? Yes, I mean, that's one of the things that I've asked you over the last few years. You got to give yourself a break.
For those who didn't know, he's basically the one that runs everything. He was a one-man show, and so, you know, the concern is if he gets sick, what happens, you know? So I'm glad that he is spending money on personnel costs to help share the burden.
If Nelson needs help, I volunteer. Just put that out there publicly, because I love this program. I love it, and I mean that. And I actually am familiar with a program similar to this in St. Louis County. So this really makes me happy.
Nelson says, I am not very good at doing that. I will try.
Well, we Nelson. Need to work on that OCD.
That's what I was just about to say.
All right. With that, we'll move on to the UP Center's Children, Youth, and Family Program with Jane and myself.
We just have the two left, right?
We have three, because we have this one, the WIN, and then the CR, the Perfect. Community Life Short-Term Support.
And I'm on all yeah. three, so we'll move it.
Yeah.
All right, so I just promised, since I'm on it, I'll keep it moving. UP Center, you know, personally, I really believe in this organization. This year, they're asking for the same amount of money as they have in the past, the 190 and some change. Again, we know that they are really making an impact on a lot of individuals in our communities. Again, I know we've talked a little bit about demographics. You know, they're, when I look at, you know, more Caucasian people have been served than like African American. I feel like that's a little bit of a cultural thing also, unfortunately. But I think they're working very hard to break down those barriers. So again, I didn't really see anything that, you know, was shocking to me, you know, all, you know, things that I already knew as far as a positive group. I think there were a couple questions about some financial forms, but usually those are very easy, you know, get with Leon or Chris or whoever, and we get that taken care of. It was possibly recommended to offer a 2-year term. And I think that this is an organization that, you know, has proven they're successful. They're going to stick around, and they have the best interest of our community at heart.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I don't really have much more to add other than Jane added. Obviously, locations can matter. A lot of times, if you're not directly in those neighborhoods where people are, it's hard for them to get to. I can't remember in the past, it used to be in the Champaign Library where a lot of the meetings were. Am I incorrect? Is it somewhere else?
Are you at the basement of the YMCA on campus still?
Oh, wait. There we go.
Which one is which? I'm on. No, we actually moved to the first floor of the University Y, and we have a second office down in the basement because we got so big that we had to have more space for more groups. What a lovely problem to have. But to your point, you know, we are regularly doing programs and events out in the community because we know being on campus really restricts our ability to reach into the community. So we are regularly going into the downtowns and the other neighborhoods. We go into all the different schools. We go into mental health organizations and after school programs and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, we get it. And we know that that's a big part of what we have to do for the work.
And I did have a question. Do you have people that run the groups that are Spanish speaking and have like maybe a Spanish speaking only group?
We don't have any Spanish-speaking groups. We do have community members who do translation work for us on a need as-needed basis, and we added some Spanish signage to Pride Fest this year, which we're really happy about. And we have some translation for some of our materials in Spanish, but we don't have anyone on staff or in our high-level volunteers who is a fluent speaker at this time.
May I? Did you have another question?
No. Go ahead.
I just want to say, you know, I have to admit sometimes when I'm looking at these demographics for, you know, some of the agencies, and while I'm very happy to have agencies, like I'm a huge fan of your agency, Uniting Pride. I'm very familiar with it. But often I hear it's culture, you know, it's culture over and over again. But I want to share that we have, for example, in this area, I can name at least 4 African-American churches. I can name the leaders in those communities. I can name at least 4 African-American principals from the high schools to the middle schools. So I don't think that, you know, we should always default to it's cultural. You know, for example, Latin Americans won't seek mental health services. Black Americans won't seek mental health services. Heck, I'm a Black psychologist, which is rare, I know, but it is repeated exposure. So if you all expose yourselves to various communities, we will come. Mm-hmm. If you make it a safe place, we will come. If you hire African-Americans and Latin-Americans, you often ask about Spanish-speaking therapists. If you don't have any, how can you communicate with Spanish-speaking individuals? So why would they come to your agencies? So I think it's easier to say, hey, it's cultural, as opposed to what can we do as an agency to make this better? Mm-hmm. This is our responsibility. This is not the community that's suffering. So we should stop putting blame on culture and race and ethnicity and say, what can we do better? You know, there are plenty of individuals that I know that are children that need your services so that they can feel better. I just dealt with one who wanted to commit suicide because he's gay and he's African-American, you know, and we are the most accepting culture. So we will accept your expertise if you expose yourself to it. So it's a problem, you know, that we need to fix. It's culture. They're not coming to us because if you are getting funded, and for example, if your selected priority is closing the gap, how are your numbers showing that you are closing the gap? I'm not talking about you per se. The gap is still open as it is in education between races. So I just need to get that off my chest because I hear it over and over again. Well, we don't have enough minorities because it's cultural. It is not cultural. That can't explain this disparity, especially if you're getting $400,000 in funding.
I just want to clarify, that's not our position. So I just want you to know that that's not our position.
I appreciate that, Lisa, because I do, from some of my own experiences, I have had situations where I've had, you know, tried to help people with mental illness, and no, black kids don't go to therapy. And I said to a mom, your child needs a therapist or he may not be here any longer, you know, so.
Well, what about those of us who say it's all right to go to mental, see what I mean? So you can't take one situation and transfer it onto the rest of the community, because then that hurts us too. So that's my spiel. Thanks for listening.
Just to speak up for up real quick, speak up, get what I did, see what I did there. you know, one of the things is we have been putting a lot of work into this in the last few years. And if you do compare demographics over the last few years, you've seen a dramatic increase in the diversity numbers. And I think that's in no small part due to the fact that we've made concerted efforts to have representatives of those different races and ethnicities and communities in all positions, staff, board, high-level volunteers, and partner organizations. And we really have seen the change in response to that. So I can just say, I feel like that's working. And we're excited to keep doing it.
Just real quick, do you have an idea of what percentage of your clients or people you serve are actually U of I students? Because the location is one thing I'd love to see you get out of there, because being a townie who's also U of I graduate, you know, whether I was 40 years old, that's not a place that many townies are going to come to. And I know it's money. I know you probably would love to have offices all over the place if you could afford it. But is that something you're looking at?
It is, actually. We've been looking at, and we continue to look at where a location we could be in that's different than the one we're in. But I have to actually tell you something really interesting, which is that we actually really struggle to connect with the campus community, and we struggle to connect with the campus community far more than we actually struggle to connect with non-campus folks. And we've got students who end up wandering in who are in their last year at U of I who are like, I didn't even know this existed. And there's some struggle for us on breaking through the noise and some of the gates that are kept there in trying to reach the students. And so actually, our numbers are far larger for people not affiliated with U of I.
Okay, that's interesting. And I completely believe it. Just one last note. Actually, the only reason I know about you before this is I was actually living at the YMCA up on the third floor when I was a student, and we'd had laundry in the basement. And I walked by and I saw a basket full of condoms. So I was like, wait, what? So I started reading and like, oh, okay, this is cool. So yeah, I just wanted to get that out there.
I just wanted to add a comment. Mentioned last year when we were talking about funding, the increase, I've continued to hear this year about the increase in individuals moving to the Champaign-Urbana community because we are a community that is more inclusive for queer and trans individuals. And I just want to comment, this year has become even more hostile, especially to trans people. The organization, the Transformations Project, has reported back in March that there were nearly 500 anti-trans bills introduced across the country. We have some anti-trans bills being introduced in the state legislature, but luckily very few comparatively, and they're not passing. But I just want to continue to highlight the importance of this state and being a safer state for queer and trans individuals, and especially this community, and how important services are for the individuals who are here and who may come here in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. So we'll move on to the next application, which is the community support reentry houses, the WIN recovery application with Jen and Jane.
I just have a point of clarification before we get too far on this. I have a note that says at the time of the review of this application, WIN recovery is currently ineligible for funding. Is that still the case?
The audit arrived today, this afternoon, but it takes a while to review it. So, and also I've been dealing with a personal issue all day, so I did not review it. I have sent it to our consulting CPA who reviews all of the audits. It becomes harder for him to get to them quickly the later they are. So I sent it to him. I don't know when we can expect to hear from him. I am very busy the rest of the week, so I won't be able to review it for you. So the audit is in, making them potentially eligible for funding. If there are no issues in the audit, which suggests they should not be, one of the things we would say we find in the audit that's really a problem is like if there's an IRS issue. And that doesn't appear to be the case from my very brief look. So I think it's okay to discuss this application. I mean, it's like presume that they will be eligible for funding by the time you have to make decisions about funding.
Yeah. Thank you, Lynn.
Okay, then I'll start. Just wanted to make sure that we were being responsible with our time. So when Recovery is asking for $244,342, it's gender responsive, trauma informed, health promoting services as an alternative to incarceration upon reentry, including housing, case management, WIN Recovery support plan, which is self-identified goals and assessments, physical and mental care, substance use disorder and trauma recovery, education, employment, legal assistance, all the things to get people stabilized. This is not their first rodeo with us. I did have questions about measures of utilization. There's not numeric targets in any of their application. I don't know if that's changed. So that was different for me. I'm not used to seeing it like that. In a different section of the proposal, they serve 75 to 80 people, which might be a combination of, different folks. I'm not sure. And it's the request is only for 16% of the total program revenue, which is different than some of the cases that we've seen. And the increase would support hiring additional staff, which is great. Those are the highlights that I saw at this point.
I really don't have much to add. It is a 22% increase, which I was like, wow, going from 110 to 244,000, that's quite a jump. But with that said, their total program budget is 1.5 million. So it's just a little bit of change, I guess. So other than that, I too was worried about the audit situation, but it sounds like at least we're moving in a far better direction now. And so that's good news.
I do want to say, this is Bethany.
That math. I'm so sorry, but you got it.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hang on a second. I think the board members need to discuss it first.
Oh.
There's a typo in the calculation of the increase. Sorry. But you got it right. I'm just apologizing for that mistake.
Go ahead, Bethany.
No, I was just going to speak on the increase. We've had a increase of request in regards to housing individuals, as well as the increase of supportive services. We're not like a lot of other individuals. We provide everything down to basic necessities of undergarments, all the way to coats, all the way to any items that they need, because a lot of times they come home and they don't have any items. And so we also have an additional home, and we also are extending our supportive services because we are moving into not just the housing first, but the supportive permanent housing as well. And so we have a plan in place. Another reason being so is that we don't get to bill Medicaid for any of our services. And to provide, we're pretty much caring for somebody as a primary caregiver. We're unable to get any revenue from those services, as well as drug court, specialty court, Rosecrans. Like, they get larger amounts because they're larger organizations and agencies. But their expectation of, WIN Recovery and even other homes are that we take in their clients. And so, and then they don't contribute anything to our organizations to take care of their clients that they are requiring to stay in places like us. And also the anticipation of Logan Correctional Center closing down, and how many Champaign County individuals will be returning home because of the Logan prison shutting down. And so those are just some of the reasons why we did have our increase, and what we've seen over the year that has limited us to helping organizations. And so we're just hoping to be able to provide not even just the people that we are housing, but in expanding our Resilience Resource Center, we're hoping to be able to provide the whole county services. And then the last thing, because UpCenter was prior to us, the fact that we're probably one of the only housing organizations out there that accept LGBTQ2S+ population and trans women that don't have paperwork or are not even in the change, as well as gay men. So I just wanted to put out there a little bit more information about us.
Thank you for that. I did have two more questions for you. What is the R3 grant? Because I see that's majority of your money. And I was just curious, like, is that something that unfortunately could go away? You know, knock on wood, it doesn't. And then do you do any like drives, like for, you said, some of the necessities, you know, coat drives, toilet tea drives, things like that in the community?
So as of right now, we're just now really building relationships with a lot of the organizations in the community on a more, I don't want to say intimate level, but just trying to get more in the community. And Leon and Lynn, you know I believe that struggle for us because we have grown very fast. And so being able to hire a community outreach individual so that we can really get in the community to be able to do those things. And so we have had a undergarment like drive before, but we would like to be, you know, do more part of things like that. The R3 grant is Restore, Reinvest, and Renew. It is, I believe it's from the marijuana taxes that the state receives, and they put, I think, 20-something% back into the community. And so we were able to get funded the R3, which we're able to use for some of our services in Champaign County. But we have also applied for the R3 for this year, the third round, for our Resilience Center, as well as our safe homes or our community homes as well. And then we have three foundations pending funding for Champaign Resilience Resource Center and homes, as well as a community organization. And also we just got ICJA VOCA, Victims of Underserved, Violence of Victim Underserved Individuals. And so we are able to apply that money to Champaign as well. So our biggest thing has been trying to really build out the funding for Champaign so that we don't have to just rely on mental health.
Thank you.
Hi, Bethany. Got a real question for you. Roughly what percentage of the people you employ are formerly incarcerated or directly impacted?
I would say 90%. I do have our organizational staff that doesn't work directly with clients. We have a few that are not formerly incarcerated, but have been affected by, you know.
So I just wanted to make sure, because some other organizations don't appear to want to do that. And I just want to say this isn't a question, but I think it's important to fund the smaller organizations so we don't get monopolized by one organization this entire town that thinks they're a one-top shop and just has got their foot into everything. Because remember, monopolies are not good. But yeah, great job, Bethany. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate everybody's time.
So the last program is the Community Life's Short-Term Supports. It's a new program for $232,033. The goal is to enable individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities to access social, developmental, leisure activities that they may not have been able to access otherwise. They facilitate access to such activities. The budget seeks to enhance the quality of life and promote inclusivity within the intellectual and developmental disability community. So, it's targeting people who are eligible for the Developmental Disability Board, receiving services through a DDB-funded program, and those currently registered on PUNS waiting services, seeking opportunities to expand access of their community life. Their income is at or below 60% of the annual median. And then priority consideration to those with concurring diagnoses requiring multiple supports or those with limited access to local services. So, technology is an area shared as a barrier by local self-advocates, and specifically the use of and access to technology for social and educational purposes. So this is something that specifically when the advocates came that they requested that we fund. And then the financial assistance for this technology aligns with the NCI's core indicator of providing access. By providing access to inclusive recreational and social activities, this promotes positive self-esteem and increases a sense of self-purpose. However, these fees can range between like $40 and $100 per event, which can be difficult for individuals to afford. So that's what this program is trying to help with. And, we would be funding 100% of the total program revenue. Personnel cost is about 18%. The target TPCs would be about 44 for this year if we fund it. It seems like a great program. Obviously, it's going to bridge a barrier for people with intellectual or developmental disabilities to be able to access resources in the community and, feel that they are living a fulfilled life in this community. So I think it's an important program to fund, but I'd like to see what Jane would have to add to that as well.
So I potentially might have two questions, and I do apologize, just as we all are we're at the end of the meeting, we're kind of checked out. I think I was kind of checked out when I read this one. So one of my questions is, this is co-sponsored also by the DD board, am I correct?
This is the only application for funding through the Special Initiatives Fund this year. Last year we had zero applications, this year we had one. So the DD board would have to also agree to fund it. This would require both boards to approve this one.
But it would only be for $232,000. It's not $232,000 from our budget and $232,000 from... Okay, so it's just out of that special... Okay, thank you. Now that makes sense. And then my other question was, I noticed on page 215 under some of the financial analysis, it said that... maximum of $3,000 per client. Is that per year? Are we willing to spend $3,000 per individual who says, hey, I want to do these classes, I want to go on this trip. So each person can get up to $3,000 per year or just their lifetime?
You know what? There are two representatives on the Zoom, so they could probably take the question, but I think if you're asking me, I think you've got it right. I think that's exactly what it means, once a year. Yeah.
Hi, this is Jessica McCann from Regional Planning Commission. I'm happy to answer that question as well. Just with the program being new, we wanted to put a maximum funding that would provide an equitable amount for each person each year. And then we could definitely revisit that cap and based on feedback from the board and our participants. But that's just a starting point, and it would be per year at this point.
I guess just initially, I thought that was quite a bit per person. Because if I think of like a trip or something, and I, from personal experience, I potentially am going to be an executor for my sister who has disabilities, and, you know, learning about special needs trusts and ABLE accounts, I'm kind of like, wow, $3,000, that's a heck of a trip to Disney or something. So that's what, like, I think sparked my mind last night. I'm like, Jane, go to bed. So, okay, thank you for clarifying that.
I think from my perspective, like someone who goes to conferences for pediatrics, right? I can just share some details, but like it used to be, they used to give us $2,000 in spending that, but you have to like do all the things and fill out the paperwork, and then you get reimbursed after you spend it, right? So you don't know you're getting the money right away. Now they increased it to $4,000 for doctors, but every job is different. But when you think, oh, it's, you know, you can go on a trip to whatever, you know, Chicago, or you go to Miami or whatever, it's not going to be that expensive. But when you go, like, say someone wants to go to a conference that's specific for what they want, all the hotels are more expensive that weekend. The airfare is a lot more expensive that weekend. Everything you want to do there is going to be more expensive. And so you get to $2,000. Like, I probably easily spend $2,000 if I go to a conference just on airfare and hotels, not including the food and everything else there. So when you add all that up, and that's not doing anything fun. And so... you know, once they do that, right? Who does fun, right? I think 3,000 is probably just pretty reasonable, so that they make sure they cover all the expenses for like a one-time trip. From my perspective, and so I'm sure someone with, you know, intellectual developmental disabilities may need different seating on a plane too, and so that might be more expensive as well.
And this is why we're having a study session, so we can see different perspectives. So thank you.
And I mean, and just speaking about a history of this, I don't, are you guys doing any collaboration with any of the other organizations that might do some of this work? Because I know when I worked at DSC almost 40 years ago now, it's been a while, we took some folks to Disney, and it wasn't $3,000, but we did do some of these things, and we had some Friday night activities and things like that. So are you willing to collaborate with some of the organizations that already might be doing some of this work?
Absolutely. We'd be more than happy to collaborate to glean from experiences that organizations have already had doing this specific work, but also, you know, really is just looking to be sort of not only a supportive service, but a fiscal sort of agent in this process. We want to collaborate with existing funding sources in this area too. So I think in both ways, we're really hoping to be collaborative, and we'd like to lean in on, I think we talked a little bit about in the Developmental Disabilities Board meeting, potentially having a future study session, like you had mentioned, and just really getting some feedback about how we can collaborate and, you know, other ideas that are out there. So we're more than willing and open to do that.
I think the other thing too is, you know, with technological devices, I feel like, or at least just things in our office, in the medical office, I feel like the office can spend up to $5,000 without having to get like a special request from, you know, the higher ups to buy a device, right? And so then all these medical devices and everything, they cost that amount. It's like, okay, they know what the price point is. And so for someone who needs, you know, a medical device or some other kind of thing, that technological thing that could help them, I think that would be very useful, especially nowadays. Like, there's so many different things that are out there that I don't even know of that can be very helpful. Obviously, we had that presentation of the group from the U of I about all the stuff that they can put in people's homes to make their lives more accessible. So, any other questions? All right. With that, thank you, everybody. I appreciate everyone for your patience and all the agencies out there that participated today. Thank you so much. You know, everything you've done is so invaluable. So I will move.
There's no agenda items. Yeah. Agency input, which is a kind of important.
Yeah, so I will move to the next item on the agenda, which is agency input. If there's any agencies out there that would like to make any comments, now is the time. We'll limit to 5 minutes.
We're not quite done.
Yeah. All right. Seeing none out there, we'll move on to board announcements and input. Seeing none, I will move to adjourn. All right. All right. See everybody next month. Thank you. Well,